The little red-haired captain, seated at his board full of dials and screens, headphones clamped to his ears. The lieutenant introduced himself. "I'm the new navigator, Lieutenant Sharman. You must be Mr. Hartunian." "Harry." Sharman nodded and put out his hand. "I'm John, without an H." "John," Harry said, grasping the lieutenant's proffered hand. The kid's grip was firm, his long fingers wrapped around Harry's hand. "I'll tell Colonel Christopher you're here." One by one, the plane's engines were growling into life. Harry stood uneasily next to the communications console while Lieutenant Sharman ducked through the cockpit hatch. Harry caught a glimpse of the control panel, studded with instruments and sensor screens, and the windshield above it. It still looked miserably gray and foggy outside. Maybe they've canceled the flight, Harry thought. But then he countered, "So why is she powering up the engines?" Lieutenant Colonel Christopher came out and forced a smile from him. She was small, petite really, but he could see that she had an adult's body beneath her blue fatigues. Dark hair, bright, intelligent eyes. Really pretty, he realized once again. For a moment, he thought she looked familiar, as if he'd seen her somewhere before. But that's impossible, Harry thought. Our paths haven't crossed before this. Still, he couldn't shake the nagging thought that they had. "Mr. Hartunian," she said, without offering to shake hands. Harry nodded. The colonel looked as grim as death. "We have a situation on our hands," she said. "A situation?" Harry asked. "I just got a top-priority message relayed from Washington. There's been an attack on our orbiting satellites, and..."
"An attack?"
"A missile fired from North Korea detonated a nuclear device in geosynchronous orbit several hours ago. Just about every civilian satellite around the world has been knocked out of service." Harry gaped at her, his heart suddenly pumping wildly. "From North Korea?" "We've been ordered to proceed to a position over the Sea of Japan and be prepared to shoot down any more missiles that the North Koreans launch." Christopher spoke crisply, with no hesitation, no doubts in her tone. "But we can't. I mean, we're supposed to be testing the laser. We're not ready for a shooting war." Colonel Christopher said, "You techies are never ready for reality, but ready or not, Mr. Hartunian, those are our orders. Get your people on the mark. Make sure that ray gun of yours works right." Jefferson Hotel, Washington, D.C. It had started to rain. Looking out the window of the penthouse suite sitting room, the Secretary of State saw brittle, dry leaves gusting across the pavement far below. The afternoon sky was clouded over, gray and gloomy. Yet she felt excited, eager. How often had she used this suite over the past few years, she wondered idly. It fit perfectly her need for an informal meeting place, a spot where she could chat quietly in privacy with men or women who preferred to stay safely out of the glare of publicity, a place where she could develop the back-channel contacts of her own, without the State Department's bureaucracy's officious meddling. The Jefferson was perfect. Downtown, close to the White House, old, elegant, and very discreet. After leaving the White House that morning, she had changed her attire for this meeting, a quietly elegant pantsuit of pearl gray over a tailored white blouse with a small choker of pink pearls and matching earrings. She turned away from the windswept windows, thinking, "He'll come. He's got to come." The phone on the desk chimed, and she rushed to it before it could ring twice. The face of the young security woman down in the hotel's lobby appeared on the screen.
"Mr. Kwang is on his way up, Madam Secretary.